Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. You are in for a treat today. This, I think, is going to be quite fundamental. I feel like I'm not saying this. But anyway, I think it's going to be quite a fundamental episode. I was inspired to talk about this today because I was doing some prep for a lecture that I'm doing for EIQ Nutrition on dietary adherence. And it's been really interesting to see what the research says about adherence, which actually isn't always what you think it might. Now, I like to reflect on these things to see how I can apply research into practice, when you should, when you shouldn't. And then I often basically use this to streamline my coaching systems and figure out what's going to get my clients the best results. The coaching methods I use to help people, not just to lose fat, but also to maintain it, which is the most important thing, as we all know. Otherwise, people are just in this perpetual yo-yo dieting cycle forever, which is no fun. But these methods that I use require a mix of physiology and biology, behavior change, observations of human behavior and tendencies, bit of psychology, and probably most importantly, experience from working with over 10,000 women over the past 14 years. And not just working with them, but listening to them. And I'm really lucky to work with absolutely incredible women who take the time or give me the time to really give me useful feedback, some of which I will actually be sharing here. But knowing what the clicking point is for people or was for people, or what triggered them to actually make change that lasted, or what they found different about this approach, what the fundamental principles were which helped them not just lose fat but also keep it off, that is so useful. And research alone isn't a very good coaching backup. What's the right way to say that? Basically, just using research in your coaching probably isn't going to get you great results, right? It's how to apply that and how to add that to your experience. And this all probably sounds a little bit fluffy, but like, you're going to see what I mean. So I'm going to go through 6 or 7 research-backed practices that have been shown to help with adherence. And these are going to help both coaches and clients. So if you're listening and you're a coach, because I know about half of you are, then you're going to get a lot from this as well, and hopefully you can apply this to some of your clients too. So the first thing I want to talk about is the fact that adherence to a diet is more important for results than the specific diet that you stick to. That's not my opinion. That's not me saying that. That is just fact. This probably seems somewhat obvious to a lot of people, but there is so much confusion about the best diet, and then like this overwhelm of which one you should stick to, which one would be best for me, am I doing this wrong, is this going to make me fat even though I'm in a deficit, is this going to, that then often people just kind of don't take any action because it all seems too confusing. But fundamentally, the reason that so many different diets work for fat loss is because if you create a deficit and you stick to it, you will lose fat. Doesn't matter if it's low carb, if it's low fat, if it's intermittent fasting, if it's keto, if it's Slimming World, blah, 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 blah. They all work if you stick to them. The key is finding a diet that you want to stick to. And in my opinion, one that makes you feel great and gives you the life balance that you want and allows you to show up at your best in all areas of life, right? There's no like getting away. I didn't bullshit people, right? Will dieting require some compromise? Yes. The important part is it shouldn't be sacrifice. There's a big difference there. You will resent sacrifice, but you can choose to embrace a bit of compromise in order to reach your goals. And this is the exact approach we take on Commit 6. We make the diet fit around your life, not your life around the diet. The second point I want to talk about is that exercise improves adherence despite what many people think. Most people actually report eating less after exercise, not more. So in this particular study, 44% of people ate less in the exercise group. Only 10% of people 8 more, and about 46% of people didn't have any change at all. Wow. And I can't emphasize the importance of considering the individual in both of these factors, right? One, choosing the right approach to create your deficit, and how exercise impacts the individual. So if you look at research, it shows that there isn't a big impact of exercise on appetite, when in reality, there is. Some people experience appetite suppression and others find that their appetite increases. And when you look at the average, you don't see that much effect. But when you look at individuals, it's a different story, right? And also remember, you need to look at, you know, people will pick a study and be like, oh, you know, actually 40% of people ate less, but you don't know who that study's in. You don't know that it might be an obese man and you're a perimenopausal woman. Like, does that directly apply to you? So research is good, but you need to know when to apply it and when it's appropriate. And you need to consider that research always is looking at averages. And you're, by definition, like, not an average. You are an individual. The same can be true for differing dieting approaches, right? Some people actually do really well on low carbs, like really well. And other people prefer counting calories or do better on a higher carb diet. There isn't a right or wrong. And many coaches could do with kind of like judging less on that front. Like, a lot of people got really kind of research excited, or science excited. Well, the science says there's no benefit to low carb diets. You don't need to. It's like, yeah, of course you don't need to. But just because you don't need to cut carbs to lose fat, that doesn't mean that it might be a very useful tool for some people, right? And I've found, this is where experience comes in, especially for small women who need to diet on low calories. A low carb diet tends to reduce appetite and make sticking to your deficit easier. Saying that, not all small women, right? Some people find it very restrictive. I actually don't. I prefer to cut carbs when I diet than count calories. Just the way my brain works, just my preference. I feel restricted cutting calories. Sorry, tracking calories, because obviously I'm cutting calories either way. That's why you would lose fat. But I feel more restricted counting calories than I do just reducing carbs. Some people prefer to eat whatever they like within their calories, and then they have to track those as opposed to just reducing carbs. No, in both instances, you will lose fat if you create a deficit. The question is, how would you rather create that deficit? The third thing that was interesting about this delve into like the most impactful elements of adherence, that was a really bad way to say it, this research on adherence, right? The third thing I want to talk about was that holidays were the most common trigger for decreased adherence. And this is exactly why I do reset weeks with my clients after a holiday, because it is never the overeating occurrence or even the holiday that does the quote unquote damage to your fat loss. It is always your response to it. So a holiday, a slip up, a disruption in your routine, it's often the trigger for continued overeating. And then you end up not getting back on track, right? That's the reason that you then don't lose fat. This is why after a holiday or like something, you know, an overeating occurrence or something, we do a reset. It's not falling in the river that drowns you, right? It's staying submerged. So you're back into routine. Often if it's a holiday or something, I'll do a very strict week to reform those habits and get back into a good routine. I wanted to use a different word for routine, but I don't have one. And honestly, it normally only takes like 3 or 4 days to then get back into the flow of it. So it's important to have a plan to get back to, rather than just hoping it's all going to fall back into place. And it also reduces a lot of anxiety that people feel around that. So it's what to do for those first few days. What do they look like? Have you planned them out? When's that first session going to happen? Another of the biggest predictors of adherence is how much weight someone has lost at 6 months. So a direct quote from a review here: Dietary adherence is strongly associated with rates of weight loss and adversely affected by the severity of caloric restriction. Weight loss programs should consider moderate calorie restriction relative to estimates of energy requirements rather than generic low-calorie diets, right? So they're referring to just like eat 800 calories or eat 1200 calories or whatever. Now, you can see why this is somewhat contradictory, right? Dietary adherence is strongly associated with rates of weight loss, which are obviously going to be related to the amount of calorie restriction, but they are adversely affected by the severity of calorie restriction. So by that, I mean, like, if you're in a bigger deficit, you're going to lose more weight quicker. And they're saying that will increase adherence. But then if you're in a big deficit, that's going to reduce adherence, right? This is actually something that people really struggle to get their head around. So in theory, the biggest deficit would come from a very low calorie diet. But in practice, people don't stick to it, right? That reduces their adherence. This is the reason that dropping your calories doesn't work. It isn't because your metabolism adapts or you go into starvation mode. It's because your adherence suffers and then you don't stick to it. And thus, you actually end up creating a smaller deficit trying to stick to lower calories because you're not sticking to them. I like to explain this like a marathon, right? Like if you're running a marathon, if you want the best time, you need to pace yourself. You don't sprint flat out from the start, right? That's the equivalent of dropping your calories really low. This is why the right calorie range for you matters. There is a sweet spot, and it's a combination of physiology and human behavior. It's not quite as simple as a calorie calculator makes out. So if you've struggled with fat loss, don't beat yourself up, right? Not your fault. It's not this simple equation it's made out to be. When you add in the fact that you're actually not a robot, and when you change one side of the energy balance equation, for example, energy in, aka how many calories you are eating, you also impact the other side. By that, I mean, when you eat less, you counteract that somewhat, or your body does, by annoyingly increasing hunger and reducing energy expenditure. And this makes sustaining a deficit hard. Now, what I'm going to say is it's hard, but it's not impossible, especially if you use range targets set by me and you consider what you eat too, not just how much you eat. How you create a deficit will impact how easy or hard it is to stick to that deficit. Your food choices matter a lot, way more than you've probably been led to believe if you've been following like people who are tracking calories. If you're like, oh, I can eat whatever I want within these calories, to an extent, but you're really going to struggle if you don't consider the food you're eating, especially if you're a woman on low calories. And this part isn't so simple either, right? So you need to consider, for sure, food volume and high protein. If you're listening to this, you've probably heard me talk about that before. But you also need to consider cravings, life balance, enjoyment of food, and then like dietary longevity, right? If you're going to stick to this forever, you probably don't only want to eat massive stir fries and chicken, right? So this part needs to be quite specific. There's no point telling someone, oh, include chocolate in your diet because I like chocolate. Like, if they're not that fussed for it, they might be like, oh, I'd rather be able to include chips in my diet every now and again. Okay, fine. What's going to mean that you don't resent sticking to it? You know, what's your thing? What's your puck yes, if you will? The fifth thing that came up from this research is self-efficacy and social identification with one's dietary group was positively associated with adherence. That sounds like waffle, but what it means is think like, you know, people like, I say people, that's probably a good example of this, but vegans and vegetarians have better adherence to their diets than people who are just trying to lose weight. Not really that surprising, because they identify, you know, it's part of their identity. This is why I force everyone on Commit to Six to get tattoos of the Commit to Six logo. No, I'm joking. But identifying as, I don't know, like a healthy person, someone who is fit, someone who looks after themselves. One way to do that is to surround yourself with like-minded people. Hence why I love group coaching programs. And I always remember this stat from the book, what was the book? A Friend of a Friend. And this stat is from the Faringham Heart Study that found that if a friend of yours is obese, you are 45% more likely to gain weight. And this is the interesting part. If a friend of a friend is obese, you are still 20% more likely to gain weight, even if you don't know that person. Now, the causal link here is norms and behaviours. The behaviours that result from these like social norms. Of course, obesity isn't contagious, right? It's not like coronavirus. But social norms kind of are, right? Like they do spread. And another really cool example of this, because I'm on it now, is happy friends make you happier. So even if you have friends of friends who are happy, it relates to a 6% increase in happiness. So to put that into context, people say that a £10,000 a year pay rise is thought to only increase your happiness by 2%. So it's literally better to have a friend of a friend who's happy than get a pay rise. Crazy, right? Anyway, the last point I'm going to make about adherence is the biggest predictors of low adherence. Just pause for a second and think what they might be. Drum roll. It's being a woman. Being a woman, smoking, and having a high starting BMI. And the reason is, sorry, I'm also choking. I really hope I'm not getting unwell. Anyway, it's harder for women. Why? Because we have hormones to manage as well. And it's even harder when you're perimenopausal and your hormones are fluctuating even more. Now, to be very clear, being perimenopausal does not cause weight gain. And you lose fat in exactly the same way as anybody else by creating a calorie deficit. The reason it's harder is because you have so much more going on. Specifically, I found the fluctuation in mood and thus motivation levels. If you think about how hard it is to stick to your diet, to get to the gym, stay active, like the few days before your period, how much more cravings you have, honestly, how much lower your mood and motivation levels are is like the fundamental thing. You now feel like that most of the month without warning or explanation, times 100 with heightened symptoms and other things going on. Like, no wonder it's harder. Now, all of the research on menopause symptoms, all of it, finds that lifestyle modification via diet and exercise is the best thing that you can be doing to alleviate symptoms. It is the only non-controversial treatment of menopause symptoms. Now, I'm not going to get into HRT. HRT definitely helps many women, if not most women, but some women cannot or do not want to take it. I actually had a discussion with a woman who's joining the next Commit Six this week, who's decided not to take HRT. And she was like kind of probing me as to my like thoughts on that and not like, do I agree with it? Like, am I okay with her decision? Oh God, maybe I'm getting unwell. And I was like, look, I'm not here to judge you. I'm not a doctor. If you've decided with your doctor that's the right decision for you, then my job is to support you. I'm not going to push HRT and I'm not going to tell you not to take HRT. And like that's a decision that you make with your doctor. And I, as your loving and supporting coach, support that in any way that I can. I absolutely love working with perimenopausal women, especially those who like to refuse to accept like, oh, aging's just downhill. And they're like, yeah, sure, most women put on weight during menopause, not me. We now have a bit of a tribe of women on Commit to Six who are all just like, do you know what? Fuck average. That's not how I want to live my life, right? And they are thriving despite often struggling with quite a lot of symptoms. The hard part is often starting, because in order to feel better, you you have to start when you feel shit, which is the hardest bit, right? But if you are ready to change, if you're sick of feeling rubbish, I would love to help you. And we will meet you where you are, and you will be surprised how quickly you progress when you commit to even seemingly small but consistent changes. I actually had a question about this on my story yesterday, something like, I feel lethargic all the time, low motivation, low energy levels. Like, is this just aging? And I cannot emphasize this enough. No, it's not. It's just that we need to start where you are and push you just slightly, but not too much, because otherwise what tends to happen is you become even more fatigued, or you just give up on the exercise because it's too much. Trust me, this will help you feel better. The right dose of exercise will give you more energy, not less. And we just need to make sure that we're fueling you properly while you do that. Sorry, a little bit of a tangent there. And it turns out I am slightly losing my voice, which is not great on a Monday morning. Anyway, I think to wrap this up, I think a lot about different dietary approaches, adherence, the psychology of change. And really that's the fundamental as to how I then engineer my coaching to make sure that people get results that last. This is what I would say makes Commit to Six different. This is what makes my coaching approach different. It's not like the diets you've done before. We marry science with application and real world experience. So if you want to join this intake of Commit to Six, head over to esgfitness.co.uk/commit. The link is also in the show notes. There's also a link that you can click to WhatsApp me directly if you have any questions at all. If you're ready to try something new and you've been trying to mold your life around diets that you jump on and off over years and years and years, like this is for you. This is the clicking point. This is the final time you're going to diet. And I want this to be the last diet that you ever do.